Okay, good morning, Boker Tov. It should be a good morning. Please, God, we should hear Besoros Tovos for Klal Yisrael, for Am Yisrael. Our hostages should be home. Soldiers return to their family in a sweeping victory over our enemies. Nirtza Hashem. I want to thank our generous series sponsors for the year. Parsha series is generously sponsored by Becky and Avi Katz and family in memory of Becky's father, David Grossman, Le'ilu Nishmas, David Ben Menachem Manish, and Neshama Sherev and Aliyah. This morning's shiur is sponsored by Sarah Margulies in memory of her mother, Miriam Bas Mordechai, whose Yahrzeit is today. We're very grateful to her. And in memory of Sam and Ruth Shanker, very grateful to those who've sponsored in memory of the Shankers, and by Avi Miller, in appreciation of BRS and the Divrei Torah we have here. Mirtz Hashem, next week is our annual fly-in. We go to New York for a few days, a whole chevra of guys to meet with Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe, Tzadikim, Maskanim, which means that I won't be here on Tuesday. So we're going to do the Parshas Shir Sunday night instead. Whoever can come. 6:15 Sunday PM. Coffee, decaf. We'll have decaf available. Sunday, 6:15 PM. If you're in the Parsha WhatsApp group, we'll remind you there. We have the privilege of reading Parsha Tzav, page 568 in the Oros Scroll Stone Chumash. By Daber Shema Moshe Lemor, God spoke to Moshe. Tzav es Aaron ves Banav Lemor, command Aaron and his sons. Zos Torah Sa'ola, this is the law of the Korban Ola, the elevation offering. Hiya Ola al Mogdal Mizbeach. This is the elevation offering that stays on the flame on the altar, kol alayla, all night, ad haboker, until the morning, ve'esha mizbeach tukadbo, and the fire, the flame of the altar, should be a flame, should burn on it consistently. The simple understanding of this pasuk is it's referring to the korban ola. The korban ola, we have different types of korbanos. Some were eaten, some were consumed entirely on the altar. The korban ola was consumed, was all gavoa, was consumed entirely on the altar by Hashem. But I want to share with you an incredible Or HaChaim HaKadosh. L'Chaim Ben Atar, it's a very long Or HaChaim, we won't read the whole thing inside, but I want to share with you because it's very much relevant. It feels very much relatable, and it feels very much what we are going through in our time, we can relate to. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh on this Pasuk, Perek Vav Pasuk Beis, on this Pasuk, Zos Torah Sa'ula, this is the law. This is the Torah of the Ola, says the following. Bederach Remez, Tirmos Kol HaParsha Agolos HaAchron, says on a level of a Remez, on the level of a hint, an allusion, you can see this whole Parsha, this introduction and this law of the Korban Ola, is referring to the Golos Acharon. It's referring to our present and final exile. Sh'anu Bol Nachameinu Me'itzvo Nafshenu. In this paragraph, this pasuk, this section of the Torah that is giving us encouragement, Zos Torah Sa'ola, this is the law, the Torah, this is our Mesorah, our tradition, and our law of the Ola, is trying to comfort us, L'nachameinu, it's giving us Nechama, Me'itzvo Nafshenu, from the depressing condition our soul finds itself in. Kikol Ish Yisrael Me'ana Hinachem Nafsho Biros Orech HaGolos. Because every soul, every Jew, when we think about for one moment, we reflect on how long this galus had lasted. We refuse to be comforted when we see this exile as interminable. We're in need of comfort. Nira lemidom elemitzrayim, because how does it compare to the other galios? How does it compare to the other exiles that we experienced? Galus Mitzrayim, he says, was 400 years. Bavel, 70 years. L'shneim yachad, tes ayin shana, v'hein hayom, and today the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is writing, couple hundred years ago, and he says already in his time, Haya Elef Tof Resh Ayin Beis Ma'ayachel Od. The time of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, this galus of Edom, the galus of Christendom, this galus that we still find ourselves in, is 1,672 years. That was then. Now we're over 1,900 years. V'lo galus levad ela inoy me'umos kikmi goyim amlacha b'nei Yisrael yavodu. And it's not just the galus, it's not just that we're exiled, dispersed across the world. And of course, in our time, we're living in the modern miracle of the ability to return home, to go back to our land. And all of us should be thinking about, as we wrote about recently, not if, but when we put our destiny and our lot in our homeland. But even there, of course, October 7th is a harsh reminder of the galus that exists even within the land of Israel. How much longer do we have to wait? And a person is looking and longing until the end of all generations. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to encourage us. Uvoroshem b'nei Torah sifsei kohen asher Torah yivakshu mipiyu, Aaron Ivanov. How did he do it? Through our leaders. And who are our leaders? Aaron, the Kohen, and his children. Lo'odia l'doros ha'sadavar hazeh zos Torah sa'ola. How is he encouraging us? That this is the law of the Ola. Zos lamaid kol aliyah she'en kamoha Ola. The word zos is an exclusion, that there is no other Ola like it. V'chazer perish mihi zos. So what's the zos? Hi ha'ola kvar dechsev mi zos Ola min ha'midbar. He references a pasuk from Shir HaShirim. So the word zos is an exclusion. The people are to be aware that there will not be an aliyah, an Ola, an ascent comparable to the one mentioned in this pasuk, which is us, Mizos Ola min ha'midbar. Who is it that ascends from the desert? Al Mogda al ha'mizbeach, the ones who were burnt on the site for burning on the altar. Heim beis pratam shanu bahem, says the Orach HaYim HaKadosh. This is two specific things. Ha'echad, firstly, shanu b'nei Torah mashayim b'chol ha'umos. We are knowledgeable in Torah. Zos olas, zos Torah sa'ola. We learn, we study Torah. It categorizes us. It distinguishes us. We are entirely different from the Gentile, from the nations of the world. We're guided by Torah. We have access to Hashem's blueprint, His instruction manual, His diary. We know and we are empowered how to navigate this world. But Beis, it means something else, says the Orach HaYim. Sha'anu miyusarim begalus, viyusurin vidalus. We have endured many afflictions, both by being in exile and by being indigent, impoverished, poor. Amar al-mokta shenimshala ha-Torah le'ish. What does it mean, al-mokta? Torah is comparable to a fire. And he quotes here the Gemara in Tainus, Daf Dalet. U'kineged ha-galus v'anaf avaron al-mezbeach. And corresponding with the galus, the exile we find ourselves in, Torah describes on the altar, k'ay yisurin mesiaches lem shem mezbeach liyosam kapara. Because the yisurin, the terrible tragedy and calamity and crisis and suffering and catastrophes that the Jewish people go through, that is similar to on the Mizbeach. On the Mizbeach, our afflictions are sacrifices on the altar. V'chinu b'lashon chachamim, and we see this in the language of our chachamim. Uve'er ad masa yo Yisrael begeder beiz dvarim elu. And how long will we have this? So how does the pasuk continue? Zos Torah sa'ola. This is the law of those who are Ola, the Jewish people who rise up, because we learn Torah. Hi ha'ola al-mokta al-mizbeach, in the exile, the sacrifices on the altar of history, the martyrs, the kedoshim, the Jewish people, and the suffering. But how long will it go? Kol halayla, all night. Shuzman ha'golosh hanim shel halayla, shomer ma milayla. The Orach HaYim says, it goes the whole night, means, like the pasuk in Yeshaya, shomer ma milayla, shomer ma milil, watchman, what of the night, watchman, what of the night. It's a reference to the duration of the exile. Al golas ad boker, shuzman she'erek alinu kvodo, v'asa boker. And it will last until the morning. And then he calculates, when is this? Hazmanu achar avar tof kuf le'elef hashishi. And he says, this is, will take place, the first 500 years of that day are part of the night. Ad ha boker, we cannot expect the ascent until sometime during the later 500 years of the sixth millennium that we find ourselves in. And here the Orach HaYim HaKadosh says, basically, he says, this exile has been overwhelming, has been unbearably painful. Everyone we face, just when we think that we're starting to see a glimpse of the light, the darkness descends upon us. And October 7th, a slaughter in their beds of men, women, children, of hostages that are taken, of wars and battles that we still fight. We're in the sixth millennium, the last millennium till Mashiach will come. Kol ha'layla, we're still being offered al-mokta al-mizbeach. The Jews are still being literally and figuratively burnt at the stake. Those who've seen Be'eri, Nachal Oz, these other cities, you don't have to go to Poland anymore to see Jewish martyrdom in Kedoshim. You see burnt homes. You see the remnants of murdered, burnt people. Al-mokta al-mizbeach, the Eish, kol ha'layla, throughout the night of this exile, ad ha'boker, until we will she'yiyah aliyah. U'boker ze'ein ani yodei u'boker she'alel fahei, u'boker she'alel fahav. I don't know exactly when it will be, he says. It's really going to be in the second half of the sixth millennium. He's writing a couple hundred years ago, but we're living it now. That dawn is about to rise. That aliyah, zos Torah sa'ola, we're going to rise. Shelo nigzar Yisrael galas ala yom echad. Because this galus is meant to last this amount of time. And he goes on and he describes exactly what's going to be and how Hashem is going to take revenge and avenge us. He says, Ve'esha mizbeach tukad bo, the fire of the altar will be kept burning. Torah informs us when the dawn of that morning finally looms, when the ad boker, when the dawn of the ge'ula, when Mashiach will come, when we'll defeat our enemies, the dawn of that morning, Hashem's anger will burn and consume all those who have tortured us, and especially, writes Torah Chaim, the Western nations, the Christians and their Inquisition who tortured Spanish Jewry, and the other Western nations, and the United Nations, and those who pass resolutions, and those who abstain from resolutions, the fire of the altar, Eish HaMidbeach Tukad Bo, that fire that consumed us through Kol HaLaila, throughout the darkness and the night of the exile, Eish HaMidbeach Tukad Bo, that fire will turn, it will consume and it will destroy Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran, it will consume and it will destroy our enemies, and those who distort justice, and those who don't stand with the victim, and those who turn on Israel and the Jewish people, and those who don't have pity on us, Hashem will turn and will punish them. And the mystical dimension is included in Tukad, which is related to Aked Ayin Kovdal, like Aked Das Yitzchak, and the Orachayim. It's a long, long comment of the Orachayim. It's meant to give us some sense of a hope, and an optimism, and a faith in a brighter future. And the Orachayim is writing a long time ago, but the Orachayim is writing to all of us. He's writing to this Golas that we feel we're in. You know, we had a 75-year reprieve from this Golas because the nations of the world had a certain level of pity after the Holocaust. But it's returned, the anti-Semitism that's raging around the world, the double standard, the duplicitousness, the abandonment of the Jewish people, it's all returned, and this isn't something new. We shouldn't be reacting to it incredulously, like we don't understand where is this anti-Semitism coming from and how could they behave this way. It's exactly the opposite. Namely, this has been our 2,000-year history, and we had a little break, we had a little reprieve, and it's back to the way it's always been. We're back to that period we thought we had the boker, the eschalta de geula, and we do, and we're grateful for it in many ways, which we don't take for granted. But even within that eschalta de geula, what feels like the beginning of the boker, we saw the light before the dawn, but the laila, we're back in the night. The Orachayim lived 1696 to 1743. Livorno, Italy, and subsequently he was buried in Yerushalayim. 1696 to 1743, he's writing this. And here we are in now 2024 in Tufshin Pei Dalad, and it feels like we're deep back in the darkness of the Laila, of the Kol HaLaila. But we need to know that Zos Torah Sa'ula, that we will rise. We will rise. And when we do, then Eish HaMizbeach Tukad Bo, the light of that fire will turn on them, the very people who carried out and practiced these injustices against us. It will turn on them. So the Orachayim is writing 250 years ago, but he's writing for us today because unfortunately and tragically, this is the Jewish story, this is the Jewish condition, and this continues. Okay, V'lavash HaKohen Midavad Mechnesei Vad, the Torah here is talking about the halacha of taking out the trash, the Trumas HaDeshen. And we've spoken about this many times before. I lost the cover of my microphone. Okay. Wherever it is. Sorry. Under the left foot. Oh, there it is. Okay, thank you. He's writing about the Trumas HaDeshen, the taking out of the garbage. We've discussed this at length in the past, so we won't elaborate. But the idea of taking out the holy garbage is a holy mission. He put on special and holy clothing. And that's with the Lavos Eish. I got the new volume. Thank you, Rav Druk, for sending it on Vayikra. And here the Lavos Eish says the following. Rav Druk in his new sefer. Rashi quotes a Pasharis Begadav. Ein zuchove el derech eretz. The Kohen, who takes out the ash, the trash of the previous korban, before the new day, before the new avoda. And we talked about, you know, the trash is an unusual way of taking out trash. You didn't just take the garbage right to the curb. First they put it next to the Mizbeach, and then removed it. Why? Because before you could offer the sacrifice of today, you have to pause and remember the sacrifice of yesterday. Before you could think about your trials and your travails and your tribulations, before you think about the sacrifices you're asked to make, we pause and we remember and we think about the sacrifices of all those who came before. It sits next to the Mizbeach. We're not the first, same as the Or Chaim HaKadosh. We're not the first to experience a Kol HaLaila, the darkness of an exile that lasts through the night. We remember. Says Rashi, "In zuchol ve'el derech eretz." The idea that the Kohen changes his clothing to take out the trash, the ash, is not an obligation. It's basic derech eretz. Shlo yilach lech be'otzas adeshem begodim shumishamish be'em tamid. The big day kahuna, the clothing of the Kohen, l'chavod l'sefaris, this glorious clothing, the uniform the Kohen's going to wear, he shouldn't soil it. He shouldn't get it dirty by taking the ash out in it. Begodim shabisha be'em keder l'rabba ayim zog bo'kos l'rabbo. Because you cook, then you change your outfit to serve, to eat. The kach v'lovish begodim achirim p'chusim mehem. So that's why the Kohen wore inferior clothing. It might get dirty taking the garbage out, and then change back for the avoda. Says Rav Druk, HaTorah omer shekasher ha-kohen makriv ola, Torah tells us when the Kohen brings the ola, la'achar shigomer l'armas hadesh, and after he takes out the ash, he changes his clothing. And Rashi tells us why, not an obligation, basic derech eretz. Rashi adds, a mashal, based on the Gemara Yumachav Gimel. Tana de Beber Shema, begodom shebishem kederi l'rabo, l'im zog kos l'rabo. V'tama davar shelo roi, sha'eved yagish l'adonu kos bodu l'vash begodom she'itamu bishelo kederi. And the Gemara Chazal gave this mashal, this parable. When you cook, why do people wear an apron? Because when they cook, they get dirty. So if you're going to get dirty when you cook, don't wear that same thing when it's time to serve. Ayim zog behen l'rabo. Sheta'asenu nislachu bebishel kedera. Afkan le'inyin hotzas hadesh. And similarly here. Ein kavad amel chasharis b'mashiris acher. After you're going to, clothing's going to get dirty, don't wear it. However, pasuk zeton biur rav. Says Rav Druk, we really have to dive into this a little bit further. If the whole reason the Kohen's changing his clothing is in order to keep them clean, why are we making a suggestion? Ooh, don't want your clothing to get dirty for when you're going to bring the karbanos. So change out of your clothing while you're taking out the garbage. Why give us suggestions? Why give a strategy? Why not just give a rule? You can't serve, don't do the avoda in soiled, dirty clothing. And then, doesn't take such a super genius to realize, if you can't serve in dirty clothing, don't get your clothing dirty. So, hayoroy letzavos, why not give us the command? Why not give us the command? Od yesh lizbonim b'divrei Rashi. Moreover, shekasal lahotzi esadeshem begadim b'chusim mehem. Rashi says, should take out the garbage in inferior clothing. Why does the clothing that one takes the garbage out need to be pchusim, inferior? Why can't he wear equal clothing? You'll have your equal clothing designated for taking out the ash, the garbage. Equal clothing that's clean for doing the avoda. Why can't the clothing be equal? You'll have many pair of the same clothing. Why does it have to be pchusim ahem? It has to be inferior to take the ash out. So Zakhtarev Druk, Lavos Ish, Kedei Levar Zos Yish Lahaktim. In order to understand this, we have to understand the Gemara and Shabbos. Gemara and Shabbos, Tav Kuf Yotes, tells us the following. Mashal Shabigodim Shabisham Kedei L'Rabo, Ayim Zog Bem Kos L'Rabo. Gemara there explains that Amoraim would prepare for Shabbos. And the Gemara tells us, Ravana Levish Gunda, Tanabe Rishmo Begodim Shabisham Kedei L'Rabo, Ayim Zog Bem Kos L'Rabo. He had special clothing to prepare cook for Shabbos, black clothing. He saved his clean clothing for Shabbos to honor the Shabbos, and he wore specifically dirty clothing to prepare for Shabbos. And the Gemara tells us this. Rabbi Chanina would be misatif. Begodim Naim, he would adorn himself with beautiful clothing and go through a long list of the great rabbis and how they prepared. So why do you need a gunda l'kavod Shabbos? Because if he didn't have it, his clothing would get dirty. Nimtzen kein she'en levi shal t'gunda shavana doma l'charichas harosh shas rav safra melicha shibuta aidei rava. The other practices of the great rabbis, they prepared the fish, they cut the vegetables, they made the chicken soup, they mopped the floor. He wore dirty clothing. One was preparing for Shabbos, and one was not getting Shabbos clothing dirty. How could you compare the two? So says Rav Druk, you know the comparison. You can understand the following. The whole idea of the Gunda was Hanhaga Kavod Shabbos. just like cutting off the head of the fish, just like shopping, just like mopping the floor, is all covered Shabbos. Preserving clean clothing for Shabbos, making sure you go to the dry cleaner, getting ready and thinking about Shabbos on Erev Shabbos, shining your shoes, all of that is also covered Shabbos. So similarly here, Gam as tzivoy haTorah binyan trumas hadeshen, eina iser leslach lechem bigdei kuna. Ikar inyan lahara she'ein ratzon hakohen she'islachu bigdei avoda asher mashmesh behem. The whole idea is not that your bigdei kuna don't get dirty, it's that you have clean bigdei kuna to honor and elevate the avoda. So if it weren't inferior clothing that you wore, then you wouldn't be creating the contrast in order to honor and elevate the avoda in clean clothing. And that is why Rav Druk says there is this notion of wearing this other clothing, because part of the kiyum, l'chavar l'sefaras, part of the fulfillment of honoring by wearing the clean garment was to not only not get it dirty, but preserve clean in order to do the avoda. There's an Erev, turn Friday into Erev Shabbos message here, which is it's not just a strategy. On Erev Shabbos, a person's already thinking about, are my shoes polished? Has anyone gone to the dry cleaner? Do I have clean clothing? Not just I don't want to get it dirty on Erev Shabbos, what are we doing to preserve and protect and ensure that there's the most honorable clothing to honor Shabbos, which is Shabbos is in time, with the Mikdash is in space. All of us are Kohanim Lagabe Shabbos, like the Kohanim who serve in the Mikdash. Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav, turn the page. Here in this context, we're told that the flame that burned on the Mizbeach, lo sechbe, could never go out. It burned all the time. Rashi says, a machabe esh al Mizbeach over b'shnei lavin. If a person extinguishes the flame in the Mizbeach, they violate two prohibitions. You can't ever put out the flame on the Mizbeach. The Mishnah Navos teaches us that there were 10 miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash every day. 10 miracles. And one of them was, Lokibu geshamim esh al atzei hamaracha, that the fire that burned on the top of the altar, there was no canopy, there was no covering, there was no roof. And yet, even though it would rain, the fire was never extinguished. Fire was never extinguished. That's one of the miracles. In order to fulfill the pasuk, Eish tamid tukar al mizbeach lo sechbeh, that the fire continuously, consistently burned on the mizbeach. Now, wonders Rav Druk, we have to understand, why was this miracle done in such a way that the rain didn't extinguish the fire? Why didn't God make it that it never rained over the altar? Why was it a more overt miracle that it rained, and yet, how peculiar? There's fire and water. Water usually extinguishes fire. And here it was raining and the fire never went out. Why didn't God instead make a different miracle, less discernible, that it not rain over the Mizbeach? Not rain on the Mizbeach. Why did it have to rain there, but it didn't go out? Just make it not rain there. You know, in Florida, Montoya Circle, it could sometimes be raining on one side of the circle and sunny on the other side of the circle. You're driving, and you go from your windshield wipers being on to your sunglasses being on. Because Hashem has it that it could rain in a distinct, special, in one place, in one backyard, on one house, over one pool. So why didn't Hashem make it that it never rained on the Mizbeach? Why did he have to make it? The miracle was it rained, but the fire never went out. And he answers, Hatshuva l'kachu shetomen kan meser atzum. It's a powerful message. Ala adam loma mizeder chayim tochachas musar, ha'esha bikir bo esha torah esha avoda, tricholios yuktos bo'eras tamid. Person has to learn from here that the fire in us, the fire of our passion, of our enthusiasm, of our energy, the fire of our heart, the fire of our soul, the fire of our avoda, the fire of our Yiddishkeit. Afilum yordam alav gishamim lechbosa. It could be raining on our fire, but we can't ever let it go out. Because the notion that our fire will never be rained on, it's rained on all the time. All the time. We meet the cynic, the sarcastic person. We spoke about last Shabbos, Amalek, Safek, who tries to insert doubt and uncertainty. Asher korcha baderech lashon kor, they try to extinguish our fire. There are people that put out our fire. There are life circumstances that put out our fire. There are disappointments that try to rain on our fire. There are all kinds of things that rain on our fire. And the answer is not to live and hope that our fire will burn, will be excited, will be enthused, will be energized and it will never run into any obstacles. That's unrealistic. It's going to rain on our fire. But our fire has to be so strong, the fuel has to burn so great that the fire has to never go out nonetheless. Zen Yisayon Gadol Ad L'Ma'od, writes Rav Druk, Shekein Olo La'odam Lachshav Hein Mishamayin Lorotzim Es Avodah Sheli. Because what happens? You're on fire, you go into the Parsha Shir. And then it rains on your fire. It rains on your fire. Person got stuck in traffic, got a flat tire, God forbid. You didn't make it. So it rains on your fire. You've got a string of making it to Minyan. You're working hard on yourself in whatever area. And then it feels like Lorotzim Es HaTorah Sheli. All of a sudden, you're on fire. And God forbid a person gets a bad cold, person gets sick, person is struggling to recover from Purim. And they think, Hashem doesn't want my Torah. He doesn't want my minyan attendance. He doesn't want my chesed volunteering. He doesn't want my health and wellness that I've taken upon myself. It's raining. It's raining on my fire. Hine kokach harbe mafriim. There are so many obstacles and so many impediments. Kokach harbe sibas lachbos seish. So many things trying to put out my fire. Aval af hapichin utzarech lomod me'esha ma'aracha. We have to learn from me'esha mizbeach tu kadba lo sechbe. Hanes lahaya ba'ofen shlayarduk shamim. The miracle wasn't that rain didn't fall. Rain fell. Uvechozos nonetheless. Lo chibu esha'esh. But the fire didn't go out. That's how we have to respond and we have to feel. Every time we run into a wall, every time we hit an impediment or an obstacle and it's trying to stop us, we made a commitment. I'm going to take on the Daf Yomi, the Amud Shvui, Shnayim Mikra, Nach Yomi. I'm going to take on the Shir, I'm going to take on the Ches, I'm going to take on the Tilim, I'm going to take on Lashon Hara, I'm going to take on being patient, I'm going to take on whatever it is we're going to work on. And then we run into that wall, it's raining on our parade, it's raining on our fire, just like in the Mishkan, just like in the Mikdash. The fire has to be so strong, it never goes out. It can never be extinguished. Not that there's no fire, unrealistic. But the fire can never go out. I've shared many times, we're learning and finishing soon, Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal and his parak on Zrizus, the Ramchal and his parak on alacrity and zeal and enthusiasm says, there are two types of alacrity, two types of enthusiasm and zeal. You need it at the beginning of a project. You want to clean your garage. You want to start cleaning for Pesach. You want to take on a new limud, a new learning. You want to take on a responsibility. At the very beginning of whatever pledge or promise we're doing, you need that zeal, that enthusiasm, that burst of energy. You need zrizus, alacrity, and excitement, and ambition, and drive. And then the Ramchal writes, everybody thinks that's the only time that you need it, and now you're off to the races. But inevitably and invariably, everybody and every project and every ambition, you're going to run into a wall. You're going to hit that ceiling. It's no longer going to feel fun. It's no longer fresh and new. It's no longer exciting. It's no longer internally rewarding. And you say, doesn't do it for me anymore. I don't really feel like it anymore. Everything's stacked against me. It's no longer easy. You're going to hit that wall. And then the Ramchal writes, that's when you need the second burst of Zrizus. Keep something in the tank, because you're going to need that second burst of Zrizus to run over or around or under, and sometimes even through that wall. You're going to have to run through that wall. That fire's got to burn so bright that even when it starts to rain, that rain can't put out that fire. That rain can't put out that fire. He elaborates much more. He has long essays in this new Sefer Lavos Eish, but we'll leave this insight right there. Rav Volba has another insight. Rav Volba says the following. Rav Volba and Ali Shor Chelik Beis. Rav Volba is writing the following. Eish tamid tukad al mizbeach lo sechbeh. A permanent fire has to be lit on the mizbeach. It should not be extinguished. It can't ever go out. And he writes the following. Harotel eskarev lashkocha el yona. This is in Ali Shor Chelik Beis, page 594, Tav Kuf Tzadi Dalad. It's long. The Chelik Sheni, Ali Shor. A person who wants to draw close to Hashkacha Elyona, to God's divine providence, to live with it, a person has to be tzanua, modest. What does it mean to be tznius? Cover up? Is tznius just about dress? Collarbone and elbows and knees and pants versus shorts? Men wear a shirt. Ki Hashkacha tznua hi. If you want to draw close to God, you've got to be like God. And God is tzanua. What does it mean that Hashem is tzanua? What does it mean for God to be modest? Kodesh Baruch Hu Nikra Uman Mutzna. So Rav Volba points us, the Mashkiach points us to the Sefer HaChinach. Sefer HaChinach in Mitzvah 132, Kuf Lamed Beis, writes the following. Lios Eish HaMazbeach B'chol Yom Tamid, Shenamar Eish Tamid Tukar HaMazbeach Losech Be'ah, our Pasuk, this Mitzvah. This is a Mitzvah, it's Mitzvah number 132 in the 613 in Taryag. Mitzvah 132 is that the fire burns on the altar and never goes out. How do you ensure that the fire never goes out? You have to keep adding wood. So wood is added in the morning and wood is added in the afternoon. Now this is very peculiar. Why? Because on the one hand, the chinuch is now trying to reconcile. On the one hand, this is a heavenly fire. This is a divine fire. God lights this fire. God sustains this fire. God ignites the fire, and God makes sure the fire never goes out. And yet, man is instructed, man is enjoined, you've got to go to the stockpile of wood and keep adding it to the Mizbeach. So if it's a divine fire, if it's heavenly fire, if it's a fire from above, why do we have to go through the motions, the exercise of adding to the fire? And listen to what the Sefer HaChinuch writes, Mitzvah Kuf Lamed Beis. Mishor She'a Mitzvah, the reason for this Mitzvah, because when God does miracles, you know how He does them? In a hidden fashion. God always tries to embed and hide His miracles under the cloak and the guise of nature. He wants even His miracles to be able to be described or mistaken for just nature. It's natural. Gam kein ben iskrias yam so shayin is mafur sam kasov sham vayola chashem as yam beruach kadim aza kol alayla vayasam as yam lacharava vayvaku amayim. Even when it came to the splitting of the sea, Kodesh Baruch Hu orchestrated the splitting of the sea in such a fashion that a person could mistakenly, I once read an article in the New York Times many years ago, scientists conjectured that if the wind blew a certain velocity in a certain direction for a certain amount of time, it could split a sea. So Hashem, everything, even the 10 plagues, even the splitting of the sea, even the miracles that we believe in are explainable. It would take a leap. It's unlikely, but they are explainable in nature. Hashem embedded, He hid His miracles in nature. Why? Similarly, He said, the fire, nothing to do with you. It's a divine fire, it's a heavenly fire, it comes from above. But you know what? You add the wood nonetheless. Why? So someone watching will think, where is this fire from? They keep adding wood. It has nothing to do with your wood. It's from Hashem, it's from the heavens, it's from above. So here, that's all the Sefer HaChinuch. Adkan the Sefer HaChinuch. The Chinuch writes that even the most awesome miracles performed by Hashem were done in a concealed manner. It looked like a manifestation of nature. A manifestation of nature. And similarly here, even though the fire descended from above, we added wood from below, because even when Hashem reveals Himself, He makes sure to hide behind the veil of nature. And Rav Volba continues. And that's what he says. When the Navi tells us, Atznei Alecha Simel Okecha, walk modestly with Hashem, he's not just telling us to conceal our good deeds rather than seek publicity. He's telling us to conceal our actions, follow in the footsteps of Hashem. To be a tzanua is not just about dress. To be a tzanua is to not need to post and publicize and status and share everything happening in our lives. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kel mestater. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides. HaKadosh Baruch Hu conceals. And we're supposed to hide and we're supposed to conceal. Not every accomplishment, not every achievement, not every action, not every decision, not every feeling, not every emotion, not every experience. Not everything is meant to be posted and shared and streamed with the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu is a Kel Mastater. Even the miracles he does, he hides and embeds and conceals within nature. And for us to be Atznei Alecha Simelokecha, the concept of Tznius is not just about dress, but it means also to be like Hashem. That's the Pasuk in Mishlei. Pasuk in Mishlei says, Vesnuam Chachma, with modest comes wisdom. Rabbeinu Yonah Kosov, Atznius Goremes Chachma Lebalea, Kihi Midas Chachama Asher Ba Yechnos HaChachamim. And the Rabbeinu Yonah writes, Tznius is a virtue attributed to the wise. They hear and listen, they don't desire to reveal what lies in their hearts. Not everything has to be shared. This quality allows them to live a life, writes Ravoba, of Pnimius. Bezemi tusav la'adam ma'amel chadash bekirbo, ashir betochem v'shom la'atzmo, v'zeu olomo shel ha'tam ha'chacham. And this is the life of a Tam ha'chacham. Tam ha'chacham is living a life of being tzanua. And this is what Ravoba writes. Had Mordechai and Esther not written the Megillah in a manner that highlights the various milestones that occurred over that 12-year period, most people would have just thought that they were happenstance. Vashti happened to disobey Achashverosh. Esther happened to be chosen as the queen. Mordechai happened to overhear the plot of Bigtan and Seresh. It takes a wise person to connect the dots to see that picture. And we're living in a generation at a time, writes Ravolba, where anything and everything is public. People boast and humble brag and share and publish and capture and stream everything that happens. But that's not godly. If you want to be close to and merit Hashgacha Elyona, Hashem's divine protection, it means to be like God. God is a Kel Mastater, God is hidden, and we have to be able to live in a world of Panimius, in a world where we do things for ourselves and experience things for ourselves and experience things without having to share them with the world. If we want Chachma, there's Snuim Chachma. Through Snuim comes Chachma. All this is our Pashuk. Eish tamid tukal mizbeach lo sechbeh. This fire came from heaven, but Hashem says, add wood, because I don't want anyone to know it's me. The miracle is mine, but I want a person to be able to explain it as coming from the wood. Because why? Concealed, modest, humble, hidden. And that is a message for us to think through everything that we do. Are we meeting that standard? Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in his Sichos Musar also draws on the Sefer HaChinuch. In his Sichos Musar, he writes based on the Sefer HaChinuch to follow. Yish Ladas, Sha'achoshach ha-master me'ene Adam, is Kvod Hashem, va'teva ha-ma'urav b'dvar Hashem, af heim tachlis gedol olahem. Nature has a tachlis. Nature, the natural world, the natural order, that which is hides Hashem from us, has a purpose, has a mission. Matzin b'sefer ha-chinuch, kuf lamed beiz, kuf lamed gimel, shorish mitzvahs eish tamen tukal mizbeach lo sechbeh, kedei lahastir ha-neis. Sefer HaChinuch told us that the whole reason that we add wood to the altar to create the fire is to hide and conceal the miracle, to not have it be obvious that it comes from above, that it comes from Hashem. V'nira she'atam b'zehu k'mo she'biyarnu, writes from Chaim Shmulevitz, the reason for this is as we explained, k'dei lahaniach la'adam makom l'taos, she'ilu le'kein areze ki'ilu nitla b'chira min ha'adam, v'yalkein asra ha'torah b'isra lav l'chabas e'isha mizbeach. Why does Hashem want us to be able to explain it through nature? What would be the problem? What would be the problem? Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is trying to elaborate on the Sefer HaChinuch. And if we knew that the fire came from above, if we knew that Hashem lit it, ignited it, sustained it, and it was able to even stay lit despite the rain, what would be the problem? If we knew that Hashem split the sea and brought the 10 plagues, and we knew these were miracles, undeniably, what would be the problem? What would we be missing and lacking? What would be overturned? Bechira. We'd have no free will. Why would we have no free will? Because free will is predicated on the possibility that there's no God. If I really have no choice, then I'm not choosing. If there's only one alternative, there's no alternative. So what is Bechira? Free will comes from my capacity to deny. I only have free will when there's a possibility it's not really Him. But if it's undeniable, if it's revealed, if it's explicit, I have no free will. Now, why is free will so important? Without free will, there's no purpose to life. Hashem didn't create a world of robots who are pre-programmed to do everything He says. We sometimes think, wouldn't it be great to have a spouse or children who were robots? Wouldn't it be amazing? Every Sunday, I could just type in the plans for the week. homework, make dinner, go to bed on time, say what I want to hear, don't say what I don't want to hear. Wouldn't that be amazing? And the answer is, it would be miserable. In some ways it would be amazing, but in many ways it would be miserable. Because what gives relationships meaning and value and purpose? What creates love and loyalty and romance? What creates it is the fact that the other party didn't have to put me first, didn't have to care about my needs, didn't have to compromise or sacrifice. And they do. And that's what generates this bond, this connection, this love. That's what makes the relationship, is the free will that each party could lean in or lean out, opt in or opt out. And when they lean in, that creates a sense of love. And the same is true with Hashem. Same is true with Hashem. Had these miracles been revealed, undeniable, then would it mean anything to have a relationship with Him? Be obvious. You'd be too afraid not to, too eager for the reward, so you'd run to. What makes life meaningful is free will. And what protects and preserves our free will? That you can't see Him or hear Him or speak to Him. That one can mistakenly think everything is nature and deny that He's here. You know, if you're driving on the highway and there's a policeman in front of you, do you have free will to speed past him and around him or not? Now, technically, you could step on the gas pedal. Technically, you could speed around him. But I would argue you don't have free will in that moment. Why? Because when you see him in front of you, and you know what will happen, the result will be if you go around him, your free will for that time is suspended. And had we seen God explicitly, undeniably, our free will would be suspended. We wouldn't have it. True, physically we could choose, but we wouldn't really have equal opportunities, alternatives presenting themselves. So it says, Rechaim Shmulevet Sichas Musar, Eish Tamid Tugan Al Mizbech Lo Sichbet, the fire is from above, but Hashem says, add the wood. Why? So you won't see the miracle. Why is it important that the miracle is not obvious and undeniable? Why is that important? Because only then do we have free will. And why is free will important? Because only then are we in a relationship. Only then does our life have meaning. Then it's meaningful to lean in and say, I believe it's a miracle. Aye. So why is that guy adding the wood? He's adding the wood, but he doesn't need the wood. Wood or no wood, the fire comes from above, it's from Hashem. And then it's meaningful when we opt in, even though we didn't have to, even when we could have opted, even when we could have opted out. Perek Vav Pasuk Tes. Moving on to the Korban Mincha. We began with the Zos Torah Sa'ola. Or Chaim HaKadosh told us, Kol HaLayla, even in the darkness of this golos of this night, we're going to be the Ola, we're going to rise when it will be Boker and Eish Tamid, and then that fire will turn on our enemies. And now we move over to the Korban Mincha. And the Torah tells us here, Pasuk Tes. V'anoseres m'mena yuchlu Aaron v'anav matzos te'achel b'makom kadosh v'chatzar o moed yuchluha. Aaron and his sons will eat what is left of it. It should be eaten unleavened in a holy place, in the chatzar, in the courtyard of the tent of the meeting. That's where they eat it. Halekach v'alibuv. The great Rav Avraham Bashor, Tavshin Ayin Aleph. He has many volumes of Alekach Va'alibov. His Torahs are from another world. Oh, unbelievable. I got beautiful videos of his Purim and Shushan Purim, 20 hours straight. He was teaching Torah, living Torah, learning Torah, singing and dancing. Unbelievable. He writes Alekach Va'alibov Parsha Tzav, Shlita. Isa begins the Gemara Pesachim tells us, Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, Sholom V'doshim Hilchos Chag, 30 days before a holiday, we already begin to learn about, ask, inquire about that holiday. Hashloshim yom yuchadin lios dorish mevakesh, ulachin lios kli roi lekabel oros achag habalik raseinu. It takes 30 days to transform ourselves to be that vessel that could receive the light of that holiday. You cannot trip and stumble into Pesach. You can't. Now, you'll say, of course you can't. It takes a man to say that, because you got to clean, you got to come up with your shopping list, and your recipes, and your menus, and your invite, and your guests, and your... Forget that. I'm assuming you're going away, being taken away. You're not cooking, you're going to your child's hosting Pesach and cooking and cleaning. So you'll still say, but I have to pack, and depending if you have kids in Shiduchim, how many outfits per day you need to wear. I'm not talking about any of that. Forget all of that. All of that. It means spiritually, the panemius, the depth of the issue. If we're not beginning to inquire and learn and study and analyze and prepare we won't be a vessel to receive that light. It takes 30 days. It says in our parsha, so where do you get this from? So listen to this insight. Listen to this teaching of Rav Shor Shlita. Matzos te'acha b'makam kadosh. The matzah of the korban mincha was eaten in a holy place. B'chatzar o'amoed yuchlua. In the courtyard of the o'amoed it's eaten. Heilige tefer shlema. Who's the tefer shlema? Shlema of Radamsk. The Heilige Tefer Shlema, Zchus Yagin Aleinu, right? Shabbat Kassel Rameis, Sheyachin Es Atzmo Kodem Pesach, Lekadish Ulatahir Es Atzmo. Here is an allusion to before Pesach. Here it's talking about the Korban Mincha. In the context of the Korban Mincha, where do you eat the matzah that comes with the Korban Mincha? In the Chatzer of the Ohel Moed. But it's really teaching us how to prepare for Pesach. Lios Kli Mukshar Sheyevel Esocho HaMatzah, Lesoch Makam Kadosh. You have to turn yourself into a courtyard of the Ohel Moed, a holy place where the matzah can be eaten. Va'az b'chatzar Ohel Moed yochlu. Shemakom ha'achila niskadesh b'kedusha yisera. The place where the matzah is eaten has to be elevated with a high level of sanctity. K'mo kedusha aseret Yisrael u'makom ha'mikdash. She'em makom shu'ata po'kem u'chatzar Ohel Moed. Va'kavanu shatzar ha'adam l'kadesh u'latahir ha'peh. Where is the chatzar? Where is the courtyard of the holy place that is our heart? The mouth. For the just like the matzah is eaten in the chatzar, the courtyard of the Ohel Moed, so the matzah on Pesach will be eaten in the peh, in the mouth, the chatzar of the holy Ohel Moed that is the mikdash of our heart. Shu makam she'ochal matzah, she'epeh naki, she'ayid hazeh ye'apeh makam kadosh. Ve'ena davar rochu klal she'apeh ye'chashev k'mo makam kadosh. The idea that the mouth is a holy place, a holy space. The mouth is a holy vessel. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says, quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah, "Kepesh al ish Yisrael u kadosh b'kedushas kli sharis." The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh quotes Rabbeinu Yonah that a person's mouth has the status of a vessel of the Mishkan. It's like a vessel of the Mishkan. Ki haTorah v'atvila ha'urevas b'socha mekadosh hapeh. When we use our lips and our mouth to utter Torah and Tefillah, when you put inside the vessel something holy, it makes the vessel holy. When we put into our lips tefillah, tehillim, Torah, we transform, we elevate our mouth to be a kli sharis, a holy vessel. For 30 days, you know what the avodah, the work we're doing before Pesach? Is to turn our mouth into a holy vessel so that when it comes Pesach, we can eat the matzah in the chatzer of the Ohel Moed Makom Kadosh. Our mouth will be a holy place. So you can't spend these 30 days before Pesach gossiping, slandering, cursing, using profanity, wasting words. We're transforming our mouth to the higher level of self-awareness about our mouth. And why is it specifically before Pesach we're transforming? He has a long essay. We're barely scratching the surface or reading the whole thing. But I'll just tell you one more example of this. Because b'mei Pesach zochem latzeis mitumas mitzrayim. Pesach and the days leading up to it, we're getting ready to rise and climb out of that impure place called Mitzrayim. And Paro, the Megala Amukos writes, Paro, the king of Egypt, the letters Paro are Pe-ra. Paro used his mouth for horrible, abusive, verbally abusive decrees. Paro used his mouth to degrade. Paro used his mouth for profanity. Paro used his mouth for arrogance. Paro was the paradigm of Pe-ra. And what are we going to do on Pesach? Pe-sach. The mouth that speaks. In Shibud Mitzrayim, in that golos, in that exile, the slave can't speak freely. The slave has no freedom of speech. The slave can't speak in an elevated fashion. The slave can't speak at all. They're silenced. They're a slave. And we're going to go from Paro, the Pe-ra, to celebrate Pesach, Pesach, the mouth that speaks. Pesach is b'gematria machitza, tzrichan l'chazek ha-chomos v'machitza shenatzan l'kadosh baruch hu sviv v'saviv ha-lashon. He has a long elaboration, as is Kedarka b'kodesh. But that's our mission and mandate. But the Divrei Torah about Pesach, Pesach, Paro, Pe-ra, they don't wait for Pesach. Don't wait for 30 days from now, less than 30 days from now. Don't wait for Erev Pesach to start scribbling your Divrei Torah for the Seder. When do we prepare? That's what this pasuk is saying. B'makom matzos te'achel, when it's ready to eat the matzah, b'makom kadosh, it has to be in a holy place where the mouth, which is similar to b'chatzar o'moid yuchlu, the chatzar of the o'moid, we are the o'moid, b'lvavi mikdash evne, we are the o'moid, where's the chatzar, the courtyard, the mouth, makom kadosh, turn the mouth into a holy place before you could eat the matzah there. That's what we have to do to get ready. That's why he points out, Rabbanu Peshischa says, just like Mesadis HaKochavim, Hashem lines up all the stars. But when you look up at the sky, you say, really, he's organizing the stars? They look random. They look like they're everywhere. Nothing looks organized to me. But we have faith. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Mesadis HaKochavim. So too, the Heiliger Rabbanu Peshischa says, similarly, all Mesechtas and all the Agaritas and everything that's organized throughout Shas, it's divinely inspired where it is and its place. So now, what's the first first sugya of Psachim? Kedushas HaLashon, Lashon Naki, or La'abasar. The first mission of Psachim, or La'abasar, when Bedikas Chametz happens. Why does it say or La'abasar? Why didn't we put it differently? Why didn't we phrase it differently? Why didn't we say it differently? And what's the Gemara's conclusion? Because Lashon Naki, we're preserving a proper way of speaking. Because what's the way to prepare for Pesach? The Peh. To go from the Pera to the Pesach. So that's why the first sugya of Maseches Psachim is all about Lashon Naki. And that's why Matzos Te'achal B'makom Kadosh, before you can eat the matzah, it's got to be in a holy place. And what's the holy place? Is the peh, is the mouth. You don't look as excited about this as I am. But it's such a beautiful, it's a deep, deep, beautiful idea. And it gives us homework. It tells us what we're supposed to be working on over this time. Zos Torah Sa'ola. Zos Torah Sachatas, rather. We went from the Korban Ola to the Korban Mincha, and then move on to the Korban Chatas. The Korban Chatas. Perak Vav Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'deber Shem HaMashal Lemor, Deber Aron V'Labanav Lemor, Zos Torah Sachatas, V'mokam Asher Tishachir Ola, Tishachir Chatas, where the Ola is offered, that's where you offer the Chatas. L'fnei Hashem Kodesh Kadoshim. It says Rashi, Ma'i Dechsev Zos Torah Sachatas, why does it say this is the Torah, these are the laws of the Chatas? Lo Malacha to teach us. Kala Osek, B'Torah Chatas, Harehu Ki'ilu Hikrev Chatas. If you occupy yourself with the laws of the Chatas, it's as if you brought the Chatas. Today we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Today we don't have a Mizbeach. So how do we achieve the atonement, the repair, the damage that led to having to bring a Korban? So that's what the Gemara Menachos Daf Kuf Yod is teaching, that today, Kol Ha'osek B'Torah Chatas, if we dive in and we learn and we study, it's as if we offer the Korban Chatas. Why is this Chiddush taught here on the Korban Chatas and not elsewhere? Zos Torah Sa'ola, L'mincha L'chatzah L'sa'asham, Shekol Osek B'Torah Yenetzarech L'Ola V'L'chatzah L'mincha L'asham. Why here? It's a bigger chiddush here. Why? Be'emes adinu korban ola ala chiddush b'chatzah shigadol yoser. Ki b'chatzah sar adinu sh'akonim ochlem b'ayla mischaprim. When it comes to the chatzah, the kohanim eat the sacrifice, and the owner, the one who offered the sacrifice, receives the atonement. Sh'akaparot liya b'achilas ha'kohanim. It seems that the atonement depends on, is conditional on the Kohanim who eat, not just the offering. So maybe it shouldn't work to learn the Torah Sachatas. It's missing, it's absent, the Kohanim eating. I would think it doesn't work, but it does work even here nonetheless. But he goes even further of Druk, and he says the following in his Lav Hazesh. This is not only true with Karbonos, it's true for Kol HaTorah Kula, and all Tariq Mitzvos, that any mitzvah that you learn about, it's as if you performed it. The Ruach Chaim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, writes this on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Kol ha'osek b'Torah l'shma zocha l'dvarim harbe. Whoever learns Torah l'shma, whoever learns Torah for the right reasons to draw close to Hashem, merits many things. V'lo odal shekol ha'olam kulo g'day ulo. And the whole world is worthy just for him. So mazah zocha l'dvarim harbe. What does it mean he merits many things? So Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, he zocha l'chol tarig mitzvos. Ki b'derech klal ein l'shem adam efsharos l'kaim. You can't fulfill all tarig mitzvos. No one person can fulfill all 613. Why not? Because you're not a Kohen, a Levi, Israel, in Israel, out of Israel, a man, a woman, a chalitza, a get. You can't fulfill all the mitzvos. So how, you're not a Kohen Gadol, you're not a Melech, a Mashiach. You can't fulfill all the mitzvos. How can you fulfill all the mitzvos? The zocha madvarim harbe, what you're zocha to is, if you learn all of Taryag, it's as if you fulfilled all of Taryag. This is what Yaakov told Lavan Arami. When he went and he says, I'm loving Garti, Vitarik Mitzvah Shamarti, How could Yaakov so boldly and brazenly say, I observed all of Tarig Mitzvos? How could he? The answer is, by learning and studying and caring about all of Taryag, it's as if he fulfilled them. It's as if he fulfilled them. You see this, the Shari Tshuva, Or HaChaim Siman Shin, quotes from the Shlach HaKadosh, Mlava Malka on Motzei Shabbos. What are we talking about? Where are we going with this? So he writes, Mishenei Yachol Lechol, a person who on Motzei Shabbos is so full, ate too much over Shabbos, no room left, can't eat Mlava Malka, should minimally prepare Malava Malka for someone else. And minimally, at least learn about Malava Malka. You're so full you can't eat Malava Malka, learn about Malava Malka. Where did the Shlach HaKadosh get this from? You got it from here. Zos Toras Achatas. Anytime there's a mitzvah that you want to do but can't do, learn about it, and it's as if you did it. It's as if you did it, just like over here. Okay, Rav Soloveitchik. We got to sneak in some Rav Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik says the following. We'll end with two Rav Soloveitchiks. Vayikach Moshe es Adam vayiten al karnos hamizbeach Peraches pasuk tezvav. Skip all the way to Peraches pasuk tezvav. Page 582. We're talking here about the consecration of the Kohanim. When the Kohanim were designated and elevated in their consecration. And with the Torah, Vayishcha v'yikach Moshe's Adam, Moshe, the shechting took place, Moshe took the blood, he put it on the corners of the Mizbeach, and so on. Says Rav Soloveitchik, Moshe took the blood, put it on the corners of the altar. There's an additional reason for reading Parshas Tzav before Pesach. Like Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Tzav contains many descriptions of sacrifices. Most of the time, the Torah describes sacrifices offered by individuals. Korban Pesach as the first communal offering represents a shift. It thus serves both as a herald of and a key to the redemption of the Jewish people. It emphasizes the sense of community among Klal Yisrael. There's only two positive commandments in the Torah that must be fulfilled on pain of kares. They are Korban Pesach and Bris Milah. We can understand the penalty for not observing the Bris Milah. Circumcision is the mark of identification of male Jews. Sets them apart from all other nations. But one might ask why the failure to offer the Korban Pesach carries such a severe penalty. Pesach Mitzrayim serves the identical function of Bris Milah through our history. It is more than a single positive commandment. It is the mark of our collective identity. We were slaves in Egypt, and many Jews didn't want to leave Egypt. Hashem commanded Moshe to tell each household to offer the Korban Pesach, the only korban that needs no altar. We were commanded to place the lamb's blood on the doorposts and lintels, an act akin to sprinkling the sacrificial blood in the corners of the altar. This act, which demonstrates complete obedience to God, is a sign of faith. According to Rashi, only one-fifth of the Jewish people left Egypt. Like the Korban Pesach, the journey required a leap of faith. Those who refused to offer the Korban Pesach showed contempt for Hashem's commandments, a lack of faith in Hashem. These severe transgressions required a severe punishment, kares. The Korbanos are introduced in Parshas Vayikra and completed in Tzav, coinciding with Pesach, to emphasize this element of faith. Normally we read Tzav, the same Shabbos as Shabbos HaGadol, right before Pesach. It's a leap year, so we're off. We still have a little while to Pesach. But that is the connection between the two. And we'll end at the end of the parsha. Very end of the parsha. Peraches, Pasuk, Lamed, Gimel. Here, Torah tells us, Mipesach o amoed, lo seitzu shivas yomim ad yom alos yimei miluchem, and don't leave the entrance of the tent of meeting for 7 days until the day when your days of inauguration are completed. Ki shivas yomim yimala yas yadchem. You have to be inaugurated for a seven-day period. Don't leave the entrance of the tent of the meeting. Here we have the proper preparation, the Yimei Miluim. Before we press go, before we started all the activity and action of the Mishkan, there were days of inauguration, orientation. There was trial. Proper preparation is necessary condition for any encounter with holiness. Says Rav Soloveitchik, Ein Kedusha, B'li Hachana. You cannot experience anything holy without preparing for it. For example, in the prelude to receiving the Torah, Moshe warned the nation, be ready for 3 days, don't go near a woman. Similarly, Aaron had to submit to a 7-day preparation period prior to the dedication of the Mishkan. The Torah at the end of the Parsha is the Shiva Yimei Miluim. Before they could begin, 7 days of preparation. Every Kohen Gadol subsequently went through a similar sequester prior to Yom Kippur, both involved an encounter with holiness. The prohibition of Muksa is centered on the need for preparation. Among the prohibitions of muksa is food that was not prepared prior to Shabbos. One does not merit nor is worthy of celebrating Shabbos unless one prepares for it. The Rambam states that it's a mitzvah to wash one's face, hands, and feet in hot water of Shabbos due to honor Shabbos. One wraps himself in a talus and sits with his head covered, anxiously awaiting the reception of Shabbos as if you're going to greet a king. The mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is preparing to receive the Torah. One similarly counts the years before Shemitah and Yovel as preparation. Holiness does not arrive suddenly. It comes only by invitation, inherent in the act of preparation. So this, the Yemei Miluim, the end of the parsha, the preparation that the Kohanim have to do before they can inaugurate the Mishkan, are a reminder to us that Ein Kedusha B'li Hachana. There is no holiness without preparation. So don't think you're going to encounter holiness and sanctity, whether it's Purim, the Yontif of Pesach, whether it's time with someone, whether it's davening. You can't run in. You can't stumble in. Person has to prepare. Ein Kedusha B'li Hachana. Person has to prepare and be mindful and get ready. Person has to put in. There's no Shabbos without Erev Shabbos. If you don't have an Erev Shabbos, if you're scrambling and running and using the last of your 18 minutes and tripping and stumbling into Shabbos, there's no holiness of Shabbos. There has to be. We spoke about this. The bells, the bells that were on the bottom of the me'il of the Kohen, b'tzeiso, v'nishma kolo, bevo v'tzeiso, and they were heard when he came into the Kodesh. When you're going into Kodesh, we have to ring a bell within ourselves to wake ourselves up, to prepare, to get ready. There's no such thing as Shabbos without first experiencing an Erev Shabbos. Ein Kedusha B'li Achana. There's no holiness without preparation. Mr. Shemesh here, B'sorif Tovas today. Have a good day.